Maharaj ruled the entire globe. He followed the orders of his father and married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwaroop. Read this storyline. Read the translations.
Formerly, this time was known as Ajanava Varsha. But since Maharaj Bharata's dream, it has become known as Bharata Varsha.
I think you read the second verse.
Just as the first book handled the first.
Why you didn't read the second verse? I read first verse, Prabhu.
Okay. Just as the false ego creates the subtle sense objects, Maharaj Bharata created five sons in the womb of Panchajani, his wife. These sons were named Sumati, Rashtrabhruta, Darshana, Avarana, and Dhumraketu.
So his married life and his sons are described in the first two verses. Next, third verse.
Formerly, this plant was known as Ajanava Varsha, but since Maharaj Bharata's dream,
So where is Chakradhari Prabhu? Okay. So fourth verse. So the Bharatmara, because Bharatmara's rule, it has become Bharatavarsha. Otherwise it was Ajanabhavarsha. Ajay is the Supreme Lord, Rishabhadev. Nabha is Nabhi. So both of them ruled. Next.
It's four. Maharaj Bharata was a well-learned and experienced king on this earth. He perfectly ruled citizens, being himself engaged in his own respective duties. Maharaj Bharata was as affectionate to citizens as his father and grandfather had been. Keeping them engaged in their occupational duties, he ruled the earth.
So when someone rules the planet or a kingdom, it should have a proper and bona fide precedence. He needs to be trained by the instructions and the example of great souls. When Yudhishthira Maharaj ruled, he ruled according to the instructions of Bhishma and Krishna. Nishamya Bhishmoktam Athachyutoktam. Whatever Achyuta said, whatever Bhishma said, according to those instructions, Yudhishthira Maharaj ruled. And whatever example was said by Yudhishthira Maharaj and his brothers, Parikshit Maharaj followed in those footsteps. So like that, many Rajarshis, they rule the kingdom in a mood of renunciation and detachment, at the same time with great responsibility, and rule the earth, right? So here Bharata Maharaj is following his father Rishabhadev and grandfather Nabhi. So government's duty is to see that the citizens act according to material divisions, that is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, for their spiritual advancement. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. There are social orders, there are spiritual orders. So the government should be able to oversee this, that things are happening properly. So no one should remain unemployed or unoccupied in any way. Everyone should get proper engagement according to their guna and karma, as per this varna and ashram. Fifth verse, read.
The great faith. Bharata performed various kinds of sacrifice. He performed sacrifices known as Agnihotra, Darsha, Purna Masa, Chatur Masya, Pashu Yajna, wherein a horn is sacrificed, and Soma Yajna, wherein a kind of beverage is offered. Sometimes these sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially. In any case, in all the sacrifices, the regulations of Chatur Hotra were strictly followed. In this way,
Bharat Maharaj worshipped the Lord through sacrifices. However, it was not necessary for him to do all these sacrifices. Most of them come under Karmakanda sections. So, and there is, sometimes there are animal sacrifices, and the purpose of offering animals in a sacrifice is to test the proper execution of the sacrifice, test the mantra. And also when the Brahmana is powerful and his chanting is powerful, it is said that the animal will attain a new body, right? So, Prabhupada oftentimes, wherever sacrifice is mentioned, he says that the sacrifice for Kali Yuga is this Sankirtan Yajna, Ashwamedham Gavalambham, Sanyasam Palapaitrukam, Devarena Sutotpattim, Kalam Pancha Vivarjayate. So these five things, horse sacrifice, cow sacrifice, and sannyasa, and begetting children through brother's wife, and offering flesh oblations to forefathers. These five things are prohibited in Kali Yuga. So of that, two are sacrifices only. But in Kali Yuga, Sankirtan Yajna is prescribed. The Yajna is of congregational chanting of holy names, not horse yajna or cow yajna or any other yajna. And sannyasa is also prohibited. So Prabhupada clarifies that what kind of sannyasa is prohibited. It's not that Vaishnava sannyasa is prohibited, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself took sannyas. Several of our acharyas took sannyas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's brothers took sannyas. If sannyas is prohibited in Kali Yuga, why the Lord himself will take sannyas? So we need to understand what kind of sannyas is prohibited. So Prabhupada writes that in Chaitanya Charitamrita purports that Mayavad sannyas, or some people take sannyas just to fill their belly, just to live in an irresponsible way, just to eat anything and everything. Or some other people, high class people or whatever, more sophisticated people, they take sannyas and artificially think that they have become God. Dandagrahana matrena naram narayano bhavet. Just by accepting sannyas danda, a human being can become narayana. So some people think like that. So sannyas of this kind is prohibited. Not the sannyas order where one accepts the renounced life for exclusively worshipping Krishna, exclusively rendering service to Krishna. That kind of sannyas is not prohibited. So sannyas which is meant for serving Krishna is allowed even in Kali Yuga, right? There is this verse, Avanti Brahman verse, 11th canto, 23rd chapter, sannyas verse. Etamsa asthaya paratmanishtha adhyasitam purvatamair maharshibhir aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nishevayaiva. So the purpose of sannyas is paratmanishtha, to be fixed up in one's service to the Supreme Lord. With that purpose one can take sannyas, not with any other purpose, right? Even in Kali Yuga one can take sannyas with that purpose. So that is about sannyas. And about yajna, yajnai sankirtana prayer yajantu hi sumedhasaha. In Kali Yuga, Supreme Lord in his incarnation as Lord Chaitanya should be worshipped with all his associates by performance of sankirtana yajna. Sixth verse, read.
Controls those who are explaining the Vedic mantras. By thinking in this way, Maharaj Bharat was freed from all material contamination, such as attachment, lust and greed. When the priests were about to offer the sacrificial ingredients into the fire, Maharaj Bharat expertly understood how the offering made to different demigods
was simply an offering to the different limbs of the Lord. For instance, Indra is the arm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Surya, the sun, is his eye. Thus, Maharaj Bharata considered that the oblation offered to different demigods were actually offered unto the different limbs of the Lord Vasudev.
So now why Bharat Maharaj is doing these sacrifices? Bharat Maharaj is a pure devotee. So he is not obliged to do all these sacrifices, and he is a great devotee. And there is one beautiful verse somewhere in the 11th canto, Uddhava Gita, that one can perform all these karmakandic rituals and other external things only till one develops love for Krishna and develops faith in hearing and chanting. Mat katha shravana adhava. One verse comes. Chakravarti Pada also quotes in his commentary that one is not obliged to do all these things. If you can give me, support me. Yeah, one should continue Vedic rituals until one becomes detached from sense gratification and develops faith in hearing and chanting, according to 11.20.9. So Bharat Maharaj definitely has detachment and also faith in hearing and chanting. Why he's doing? He's qualified for pure devotion, but still he's doing some sacrifices which are generally meant for karmis. There is a reason why he does it. And there is a process or the method in which he does it. When Bharati is doing sacrifices, it's not that he is offering oblations to Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu. While offering obeisances to Surya, he is meditating on the eye of Lord Vasudeva. While offering obeisances to Indra or whatever, he meditates on the limbs, on the arms or other limbs of the Lord. So, apparently, oblations are going to demigods, but internally his consciousness is that I am worshipping Hari. Right? This is my meditation on the beautiful form of the Lord. It is my service to various limbs of the Lord. So in that way, his sacrifice is justified. His sacrifice is very much devotional and not karmakandi. So in such devotional consciousness he is performing this. So there is no rasabhas there. Bhuktaram yagna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhrudam sarvabhutanam gnatvamam shanti mruchyati. Krishna is the benefactor of all yajnas and tapasya, everything. Right? So, one who understands this will be peaceful. So, when Bharat is doing sacrifices, he has the understanding that it is Vishnu who is the enjoyer of this sacrifice, not me. But a karmakandic person, he will think that I am doing this sacrifice and I will get so-and-so result and I will enjoy that result. It's for my sense gratification. So that enjoyer mentality is not there in Bharat Maharaj. He did not have any desires for the results or benedictions from the demigods. And he performed all the yajnas for the satisfaction of Krishna only. Krishna is described as yajna bhug. Yajna bhug, yajna krut, yajna bhug, yajna, manna mannada evacha. Like that, Vishnu Sahasranam glorifies Vishnu. He is yajna bhug, he is the enjoyer, he is the recipient, he is the benefactor of all yajnas. And okay, he is not enjoying the results, but at least he is performing the yajna. It's like, you may not be involved in some activity, you may not be enjoying the result of that activity, but at least you are doing that activity. So what about that? Bharat Maharaj is the performer? No, he is not the performer. He did it through his representatives like Adharyu priest. He employs priests and they are doing sacrifice and he is just sitting there. And he did not have faith in these actions. Right? His ultimate faith is on bhakti, not in this karmakandic sacrifice. So Lord Vasudeva is independent doer and antaryami. Ultimately everything is done by Krishna. Yajna bhug and he is yajna krit also. He is the performer of sacrifice also, and he is yajna also. He is a sacrifice itself. So Krishna is the performer of sacrifice, Krishna is the enjoyer of sacrifice, Krishna is the sacrifice itself. So Bharat Maharaj is not involved. He is involved only to set an example. He is involved only as a matter of responsibility, he is just doing it, but his consciousness is devotional. And he is never considered that this karmakandic rituals are the highest duty that a king is supposed to do. No, he never had that kind of faith, misplaced faith. So his bhakti was pure. As I said, as he is worshipping various limbs of the Lord. And his bhakti is not covered by these rituals of karma. So, similarly, when we may see some devotees engaged in certain apparently non-spiritual activities, apparently, especially when he is very senior person or whatever, we should be very cautious not to judge such people. Why is he doing like this? You don't know. In what spirit is he doing it? Is it devotional consciousness or it is materialistic? Apparently it may seem that he is dealing with matter. Why is he preaching to them? Why is he going there? Why is he doing this? Why is he reading newspaper? We don't know why he is reading news. Not to enjoy sense gratification by seeing the film news or sports news. Maybe he has some crucial service which is connected to reading that, and he will just read that one section which is relevant, and then he just closes and then moves ahead. And you just happen to see it, and then you just elaborate on it, and then you give your own purport to it, misunderstand him, and make few other people also misunderstand him. So that's how gossip spreads. It's not necessary. So it's not our responsibility to become a self-appointed judge or evaluator of other devotees' actions, especially when they're senior people. When they're juniors who are reporting to us or dependent on us, then as a matter of responsibility, we may confidentially inquire things and then understand things better and then try to help him if there is some need for help. If they're equals also, we may kind of see and try to understand things with full sensitivity. But if someone is very senior, we should not get into that judgmental mode. Right? Because intent is not seen, only the action is seen. And we cannot sentimentally also think that our intent achha hi hoga. Kuch bhi kar, achha hi hoga. Maas kha rahe, achha hi hoga. So we should not lose discrimination in the name of being respectful to other devotees. If some mistake is happening, mistake has to be seen as mistake. But we may not offend that devotee who may be apparently doing that mistake, if he's a senior person. So we should not insensitively criticize them or do something. But we should be cautious not to do it. So now here Bharat Maharaj is a pure devotee. He is executing karma through priests. So his bhakti remains pure. Even though one engages in karma by performing some sacrifices through some agents, his bhakti remains pure. Right? So sometimes we may have to take help from different experts. We may not be able to do something very effectively. For example, mobile is not working. And you need to repair it. And you don't have the ability to do it. And mobile repair doesn't come under bhakti. Anyways. But it may facilitate. Right? You may want to connect with different devotees. You may want to coordinate some service or whatever. It has its utility in bhakti, but just repairing mobile is not a limb of bhakti. So, but for that, you can always go to a repair shop and employ someone, do the repair through that fellow, get your work done, and your bhakti will continue. Getting right. Similarly, Bharat Maharaj also is employing some priests. Through them, he is doing some karmakandic sacrifice, but his bhakti remains pure. That way. So, the result and actions of karma, they generally give immediate results, and And pure devotee simply acts for the pleasure of Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the results that come from pure devotional activities are permanent and spiritual. On the other hand, the resultant actions of karma may be immediate and may not be immediate, but whatever it may be, they are impermanent. You may immediately get a result, or you may get a result after a long time, but they are impermanent results. But bhakti results are permanent. And by performing different activities, your inclination to perform those materialistic activities will increase. But Bharata Maharaj's inclination did not increase. His primary faith is not in sacrifices. For example, Prachena Barhi also performed sacrifices. And he became so addicted to the sacrifices, he started growing kushagras everywhere. He performs one sacrifice here, and before the completion of that, next program is ready. Next sacrifice is ready. Next sacrifice is ready. Like that, he continues a series of sacrifices. He has so much excitement for karmakandic sacrifices. Bharat is not described like that. He has been engaging like that. And it's also a part of his devotional service. Read the 7th verse.
In this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, increased day after day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is original personality of Godhead, manifest as the super soul, Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Jnanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the supreme absolute truth, and devotees worship Vasudeva, the supreme personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the sutra. His body is decorated with Sivatsa, the Kaustuva jewel, and a flower garland, and his hands hold a council, disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts.
Mm. So, Bharat Maharaj has performed these sacrifices. It's not that his heart is purified by these rituals. His heart is already purified. With that purified heart, he engaged in rituals. And whatever purification of heart he underwent, it is because of bhakti and not because of karma. Right? The sentence may be a bit misunderstood. If you don't read it carefully, we need to read Chakvartipa's purport also. So Bharat Maharaj, his heart is already pure. His bhakti increased. And his karmakandic activities, that whatever he is doing apparently, they are also part of his bhakti only, because he has devotional consciousness. So consciousness matters more than the action. Actions may seem karmakandic, but consciousness is devotional. So he is worshipping the Supreme Lord, he is meditating on Krishna, who appears in three features. What are the three features are mentioned in the verse? Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Okay. So, next, 8th verse, read.
Destiny fixed the time for the Maharaj Bharata's enjoyment of material opulence at 1,000 times 10,000 years. When the period was finished, he retired from family life and divided the wealth he had received from his forefathers among his sons. He left his paternal home, the reservoir of all opulence, and started for Kulahasrama, which is situated in Haridwar. The Salagrama Silas are obtained there.
Mm. So, Bharat Maharaj's heart is purified by... Bharat Maharaj retired and went to Kulahasram. So, as we discussed earlier also, these great Rajarshis, they retire at the right time. They don't unnecessarily hold on to their posts till the fag end of their lives. I think in 5.1, 5th canto, 1st chapter was going on, I elaborated on it a lot. I'll not touch upon that subject. So basically, Bharat Maharaj retired and went to Kulahasram at the right time. 9th verse.
At Kunaha Ashram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, out of his transcendental affection for his devotee, becomes visible to his devotee, satisfying his devotee's desires.
So, at Pulahashram, how the Lord reciprocates with his devotees is described. Lord always exists in different transcendental forms. Devotees worship all these forms according to their liking. Ramadi murti sukala niyamena tishthan nanavatara makarod bhavaneshu pintu. So, Krishna appears in various forms and all these forms are potent. And there are different categories of incarnations, which we will study in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and we have already studied to some extent in first canto also. So, yadyad dhyata urugaya vibhavayanti tattattvapuhu pranayase sadanugrahaya. A devotee has a specific mood in which he worships the Lord. He likes and appreciates certain form. And Krishna is very kind enough to reciprocate with that devotee in that particular form. And Krishna is so kind and affectionate to his devotees that he has the ability and bandwidth and mood, inclination, to manifest a unique form to reciprocate with every single living entity. Just to reciprocate with your mood, he will manifest a form with certain mood to reciprocate with you. So, I mean, just one person. Now you are dealing with 10 people in the batch. Different people have different moods. When you are rasa, whatever, when you are dealing with one person, automatically you adjust your style according to what the other person might want, right? Consciously or unconsciously, to a small extent or a great extent, whatever. Depending on the other person, you reciprocate with him. Yedhamam prapadyanti principle works, ultimately. If an ordinary living entity has this ability, what to speak of the Supreme Lord? He can have tailor-made reciprocations with different living entities. A devotee is always fully surrendered to the loving service of the Lord, and the Lord is visible to the devotee according to devotee's desires. Next, 11th verse.
In the gardens of Pulaha Ashram, Bharat Bharata live alone and
collect... 10th verse we didn't read.
In Pulaha Ashram is the Gandaki river, which is the rest of all rivers. The Salagrama Sila, the marble pebbles, purify all those places. On each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels are visible.
So Salagrama Sila are available in Gandaki river. Yes, next.
In the gardens of Pulaha Ashram, Maharaj Bharata lived alone and collected a variety of flowers, twigs and tulasi leaves. He also collected the water of the Gandaki river, as well as various roots, fruits and bulbs. With this, he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, and worshipping him, he remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated, and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this study position, he felt full satisfaction and was situated in devotional service.
So, Bharat Maharaj performed worship of the Supreme Lord at Pulaha Ashram, and everyone is searching after peace of mind, Prabhupada says, and this is obtainable only when one engages in devotional service. And by engaging in devotional service, one is completely freed from desire for material sense gratification. So, in the heart, when there are so many material desires, one cannot access that satisfaction. One cannot be satisfied. Because material desires, then by nature, material desires are generally unfulfilled. And even if they are fulfilled also, there is a lot of guilt. There is a lot of inconvenience. And they are not fulfilled to the highest extent. For example, someone has a desire to eat so much of sweets. It's a very sattvic desire. So much of flesh. You may eat. And at one point, his belly is full. His tongue may desire to eat, but nothing is going inside. Right? So material desire means it cannot give you complete satisfaction of the heart or the senses. There is always more hankering. It creates more material desire. Either the desire cannot be fulfilled, it's impossible to be fulfilled, or even if it is possible to be fulfilled, the capacity to which you can fulfill is very meager. You cannot have unlimited capacity to eat unlimited quantities of food, although it is your favorite. Your heart may be hankering for it, but your body is not allowing it inside. Or you may not get only. Either you don't get, either even if you get, you can't relish it to the fullest extent. That's how material world is. So, or even if you get it, you can relish it to the fullest extent, you cannot get it for a longer time. Once you may get feast, but not whole day. But so we need to... So Prabhupada says the only satisfaction is devotional service. Worship of the Lord is not at all expensive. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktiya prayachati. Savai pumsam paro dharma vasudeva bhagavati. Prabhupada quotes all this and says the supreme occupation of a living entity is to perform devotional service. And only by performing devotional service without any interruptions and without any motivations, one can get satisfaction. Vayatma suprasidati, complete satisfaction. Otherwise, no, forget satisfaction. If bhakti is done without any interruptions and without any motivations, then there is satisfaction. If bhakti is done with a lot of material desires, etc., also there is not much satisfaction. Anyways, 12th, read.
That most exalted devotee, Maharaj Bharata, in this way, engaged constantly in the devotional service of the Lord. Naturally, his love for Vasudeva, Krishna, increased more and more and melted at his heart. Consequently, he gradually lost all attachment for regulative duties. The hairs of the body stood on end, and all the ecstatic bodily symptoms were manifest. Tears flowed from his eyes, so much so that he could not see anything. Thus he constantly meditated on the reddish lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regulative service to the Lord.
So Bharata Maharaj's symptoms of perfection are described here. It's like a very exalted stage. His heart is melting. He's gradually losing all attachment to even regulative duties also, whatever rituals he has to do. His hair stood up on end. They're all very ecstatic symptoms. So, but Bharata Maharaj, he condemned these symptoms as an obstacle. And he began to worship with mantra. Someone is just there. This verse is there. Daruk was doing chamar of the Lord at Dwaraka. And his eyes were filled with tears. He is getting ecstasy. And they were not allowing him to do that service. He just stopped his ecstasy so that he can do the service. So a devotee may be, a heart may be melting with satisfaction, melting with ecstasy. But if that obstructs his devotion, if that obstructs his service, he may even neglect that ecstatic symptoms also. Right? It's a very... Bharata Maharaj is going to bhava stage now. That is described in the 12th verse. So 13th verse he says, Bharata appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing 3 times daily. He dressed in deer skin. He worshipped Narayana, whose body was composed of golden effulgence and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharat worshipped Lord Narayana by chanting the hymns given by in the Rigya Veda. And he recited so and so mantra, which is the mantra of the Lord, who is the deity of sun. So sun god is also an expansion of Narayana, who is illuminating this universe. This mantra is meant to worship him. Read the translation. Paro rajah savitur jata vedo devasya bhargo manasedam jajana sureta sadaha punaravishya cheste hamsam gridhanam drishad ringiram imaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon His devotees. The Lord has created this universe from His own spiritual potency according to His desire. The Lord entered this universe as the Super Soul, and by virtue of His different potencies, He is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. So, obeisances unto that Lord, who gives motion to Jiva's intelligence. Drishad Ringaram, Ringiram. Like that, obeisances are offered to the Lord, and His various qualities are described. So this is about Bharat Maharaj's rule and retirement. Very short chapter. Now, 8th chapter is very elaborate and very important. Now we just got a preview of Bharat Maharaj's character. Now the description of the character of Bharat Maharaj. This chapter will elaborate things much more. So Bharat Maharaj brings an infant deer to his ashram. Read the first verse. Expansion. Lord's expansion is there in the sun. Could be, it's not mentioned very clearly. 12th Canto also says something, but it was not very clear to me at least. Yeah, could be like that, Surya Narayana. Okay. Read first verse.
Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, one day, after finishing his morning duties, evacuating, urinating, and bathing, Maharaj Bharat sat down on the bank of river Gandaki for a few minutes and began chanting his mantra, beginning his own
mantra." So Bharat was doing his regular rituals, his mantras, chanting. So while Bharat was sitting on the bank of that river, a doe, being very thirsty, came there to drink water. While the doe was drinking water with great satisfaction, a lion, which was very close, roared very loudly. This was frightful to every living entity, and it was heard by the doe. So, although one may be enjoying sense gratification, or just some pleasure in this world, when you are thirsty, you drink some water, you get some happiness. Right? Even that happiness or that satisfaction also can be obstructed by the situations in this material world. This innocent doe is coming and drinking water, and the lion started roaring. Immediately, the doe became very frightful, and by nature it was always afraid. You see, it cannot just coolly just stare like that. They are always like this intention. Some of the living entities, especially the doe. By nature, the doe was very frightful, very afraid of being killed by others, because it's a very soft and tender animal, weak animal. It's not a very strong animal. A lion can walk fearlessly. An elephant also may do that. But some of these very weak animals, they cannot do it. They are always fearful. So, and it was also looking about suspiciously. When it heard lion's tumultuous roar, it became very agitated. Looking here and there with disturbed eyes, the doe, although it had not fully satisfied itself by drinking water, suddenly leaped across the river. So when some fear overcomes you, you are just happily drinking water or eating some food or relishing something, you are watching a video on your laptop, or you are doing something or something. But as soon as you hear some call, something that creates some agitation, immediately you leave that activity which is giving you satisfaction currently and immediately attend to that tension, attend to that call with tension.
Attention.
Okay, attention. I give attention to the tension filled activity, whatever. You just suddenly leaped across the river. Then the doe was pregnant. And when it jumped out of fear, the baby deer fell from its womb into the flowing waters of the river. You can only imagine what could have happened to the deer. A pregnant deer being so agitated and anxious. This anxiety is for life. Suddenly if the lion comes on it, its life is gone. The baby deer's life is also gone. So this anxiety is anxiety for life. Not a very simple anxiety. For a businessman, say suddenly he hears, he's just eating food, suddenly he hears a news. Some robbers came in your property and they have broke open your treasure, whatever your shelf where you kept all your money, and then it's gone. You won't be able to relish the food anymore. Right, he'll get heart attack, he may die there also. It can happen. So, generally, a woman might experience miscarriage if she gets into an ecstatic emotion or if she becomes too anxious or fearful. Right? So, a woman, here the pregnant deer also had a miscarriage like that. Sixth verse says, being separated from its flock and distressed by this miscarriage, the black doe, having crossed the river, was very much distressed. Indeed, it fell down in a cave and died immediately. The baby deer was lying there. Then Bharat Maharaj, first six verses describe the whole scene very graphically, background. Just imagine watching this on a movie, on the screen, all lights are off. Right? This scene can cause some tears also. When you are watching with emotions, when that mood and ambience is created, then the hero comes, Bharat Maharaj. You are from there. So. Okay, no problem. Somewhere it's there. The great king Bharata, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer, bereft of its mother, floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves and, knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. Now it's very clear and obvious that there is no caretaker for this deer. An infant deer is lying there. So it's not wrong to be compassionate upon animals, innocent animals, it's not wrong. So what Bharat Maharaj did at this point, up to this point, was correct. Right? But the problem is, Prabhupada writes in the purport, subtlety of laws of nature, they are unknown to us. Bharat Maharaj is such a great king, advanced in devotional service, almost reached bhava stage. But even from that platform also, he could fall down onto the material platform. So sometimes a scene or an incident, when we hear or see, it seems very innocent. Oh, that's so sweet, so innocent, so simple. But great souls can just give the right understanding of that scene. They can look behind the scenes, look behind the screens. What we see is what we see with our eyes. What they see is what they see with their knowledge, with their experience, with their wisdom. So because of that, they get a better understanding of a person or an incident than an ordinary soul might get. For example, Narada Muni, in his previous life, he was the son of a maid servant, and bitten by a serpent, his mother died. There also, this kind of graphic description will come. In 3-4 verses, how this Narada Muni, not Muni at that time, this boy, son of maidservant, he was so dependent on the affection of his mother, and the mother also had no one else except this boy. There is mutual affection between them, and all her hopes are on Narada Muni only. And Narada Muni had no other, 5-year-old child, has no other shelter other than this mother. So like that, their relationship is very graphically described at the end. Narada Muni himself says that mother died. Again, imagine watching this movie. When there is no lights around you, you are totally focused on the screen. Last 10, 15 minutes or 20 minutes, you are seeing all the loving relationship between the small child and the mother, all the sentiments and emotions they are experiencing, and suddenly mother died, you will also cry along with the boy. Suddenly Prabhupada gives a purport. This is the way of dragging a sincere soul to the lotus feet of Krishna. My God, what kind of perspective is this? We should cry. When that boy's mother died, just 5-year-old child, he doesn't know what to do in life, he's inexperienced, he's a small boy. So any other person would cry seeing that incident, or at least become emotional or empathetic or sympathetic or compassionate and kind towards that boy. He may or may not come forward to offer help, but at least he will feel some kindness, any gentle person. But Prabhupada is more than a gentleman. He goes one step behind and says, Krishna has arranged this death in the life of Narada Muni so that he can take exclusive shelter of Krishna without any distractions. Just imagine if the mother had died, mother had not died, and she is obliged to this boy, and this boy is dependent on the mother and obliged to the mother, and both of them will be caught up in this relationship, and then they may or may not be able to progress in devotional service. Now that their relationship is separated, right, then Narada Muni he doesn't have this obligation. He can focus only on devotional service. And definitely that mother, because she served Bhakti Vedanta, she will definitely get a good birth or better opportunity to render devotional service, either in the spiritual world or in a different life in the material world only. All those things are not mentioned, but we can reasonably, conveniently, and without any siddhantic deviation, we can assume that because of her service to Bhakti Vedantas, definitely she will get a better destination. And she will get a better situation where she can practice devotional service better without this obligation. Same thing here. Sometimes we feel that, oh, these people are together living happily, suddenly there is a separation, there is death. How can God do this to us? God is cruel. God doesn't know. That's what Kritaditi did. When that Harshasoka died, Kritaditi just lamented so much. Oh, you didn't come to sixth canto yet. So, one may perceive injustice in the decisions of God because of one's material attachments. However, Krishna knows what is good for every soul. He does the needful. Here, in this case, something else is happening. There, through a negative incident, a positive opportunity was given to Narada Muni. In this, through an apparently simple and innocent incident, a cause of fall down began. So this is the root cause of his fall down. This is the beginning of his fall down, you can say, not root cause. His showing compassion on a deer is fine. But he showed compassion and gave attention to that deer so much so that he compromised on his spiritual practices. That is wrong, as we will see in the chapter. So, Prabhupada says, Yamhina vyathayante te purusham purusharshabha samadukha sukham deeram so amrutatvaya kalpate. One has to be equipoised and not disturbed by happiness and distress. He has to be steady in both cases. Such a person is eligible for liberation. Prabhupada says that spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution. Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into material existence. So here is the discrepancy. Bharat Maharaj is showing too much of compassion on this innocent deer. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, at any moment, our spiritual advancement may be spoiled and we may fall down on the material platform. Compassion should be shown on a spiritual platform, not on a material platform. However, sometimes we may have to show compassion on a material platform also, provided that compassion will lead to assisting him in spiritual process. For example, somebody is sick. Your own classmate, batchmate, fell sick. He got some fever or cold or whatever, malaria. If you go and give him some, and he's unable to chant his rounds properly in the morning, he's unable to get up, he's so weak and he's experiencing a lot of pain. In that phase, the 2-3 days of intense physical pain, if you happen to assist him and help him, he's unable to come for prasadam, right? You take prasadam in a plate to him and then serve him prasadam. He's unable to wash his plate, you wash his plate. He can't wash his clothes, you wash his clothes. That way, it's all external activity only, right? In one sense, it's material activity, but it's technically not material activity because that helps him save his energy for chanting. If you wash his clothes and that much energy is saved, already his energy is very less because of sickness. He can focus that energy on his chanting. Right? He's unable to come for class. You go and he can't sit in 3 hours class. You go and tell him what has happened in the class in half an hour. So that way, when it comes to the association of devotees, once external and apparently material, the assistance given on a external platform or apparently material platform also could help one progress in the spiritual path. So, to that extent, it is always spiritual. So, Bharat Maharaj's example is there to caution us not to be callous to our devotional service or not to be neglectful towards our spiritual practice because of some material distractions. At the same time, it's not emphasizing on being indifferent, unempathetic towards other living entities when they are in suffering. He could have protected the deer, kept the deer aside or whatever. He would have done the needful. But bringing to the ashram and meditating on the activities of the deer, neglecting his sadhana and bhajan, that's the problem. So, the nature of this world is that Maya is everywhere and Maya attacks us where we are weak. So Bharat Maharaj does not have lust, he does not have greed, he does not have anger, false ego. So all these negative anarthas and the causes of degradation are not present in Bharat Maharaj. He has glorious qualities like compassion. So Maya knows where to attack. Okay, I want to cause his fall down. Let me go through his good qualities. What is the good quality? Compassion, he has good quality. Okay, let's see. How do I dovetail this compassion in his fall down process? Maya attacked him in that way. Right? So, if we happen to be around, probably Maya is not taking us seriously. Maya has the ability to make a devotee on the stage of bhava also fall down. Why we are not falling down? Maya is not taking us seriously. Dekhte kitna karega ye. Bhakti karne ke liye aaya hai. Dekhta hu. कितना कितना भक्ति करेगा मैं भी देखूंगा. सो दैट्स व्हाट माया इज थिंकिंग राइट. इफ माया स्टार्ट टेकिंग सीरियसली माया कैन कॉज समवन एट भाव स्टेज ऑल्सो फॉल डाउन राइट. सो वी कैन बी ओवर कॉन्फिडेंट. अरे 10 साल निकाल दिया होल लाइफ विल गो लाइक दिस आई विल गो बैक टू गॉड हेड पक्का गोलोक नॉट इवन मथुरा द्वारका वैकुंठ सीधा गोलोक वृंदावन डायरेक्ट इधर इन साख्य रस और माधुरी रस नो नो नथिंग लेस राइट. शांतर है शांतर आपको डिवोट डजंट एस्पायर फॉर शांतर. सो वन मे स्टार्ट फीलिंग ओवर कॉन्फिडेंट जस्ट बिकॉज नथिंग सीरियस हैज हैपेंड येट टू हिम. बट इफ यू आर लिटिल बिट ऑल्सो नॉट कॉशियस माया विल डू द नीडफुल राइट. सो सम डिवोटीज आर प्रेइंग फॉर अस सम डिवोटीज आर गिविंग देयर ब्लेसिंग्स सम डिवोटीज आर गिविंग अस opportunities to render service so that we can still be around. Some devotees are giving us the inspiration to do hearing, chanting and other things. Just because of the entire community of Vaishnavas supporting us at various levels in various ways, we are still around. Not necessarily because of our own abilities. Right? So one has to be extremely grateful to the Sangha of Vaishnavas. And not become very callous and careless and overconfident in devotional service. Maya is very powerful. If this can happen to Bharat, what to speak of others? So, read 8th verse.
Gradually, Bharat became very affectionate towards the deer. He began to raise it and maintain it. By giving it grass, he was always careful to protect it from the attacks of tigers and other animals. When it eats, he petted it, and in this way, he always tried to keep it in a comfortable condition. He sometimes kissed it out of love. Being attached to raising the deer, Maharaj Bharata forgot the rules and regulations for the advancement of spiritual life, and he gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about his spiritual advancement.
So this is compassion exhibited on a material platform. Affection, attraction on a material platform. On a spiritual platform also that kind of affection may be there. For example, Sanatana Goswami was having so much of blisters on his body. Such oozing substances are coming out from his body. Lord Chaitanya told that these oozing substances from your body are like nectar. So, it's on a spiritual platform, they have such heart-to-heart connection. These external bodily ailments, temporary bodily defects, apparent defects, will not affect their relationship. On a spiritual platform. A mother may smell the stool of the child like chatushmada. You know what is chatushmada? It's a mixture of four or five fragrant substances. Agaru, chandan, karpur. So like they're all fragrant substances you put together, that's called chatushmada. Because mother is ecstatic to see the child passing stool because that's a sign that child is healthy and the child has digested the food nicely. He is eating, absorbing and releasing. So that means mother is happy to know that child is healthy. So on a material platform this kind of affection may be there. On a spiritual platform some other affection. Now another example of material affection is he started kissing the deer, he started getting the food grass for it. He just took full charge of the deer so much so that he neglected his own sadhana. He forgot his sadhana. That's the conclusion of this verse, 8th verse. We have to be very cautious in executing our spiritual duties by observing rules and regulations and regularly chanting Hare Krishna. If we neglect doing this, we will eventually fall down. we must dress early in the morning, bathe, attend Mangala Arati, worship deities, chant Hare Krishna, study Vedic literatures and follow the rules prescribed by acharyas and spiritual master. So all whatever is described here, prescribed here, we'll have to do it. Any deviations from this will cause fall down. If one is unable to do certain things, that should be justified with a proper reason. Someone may not be able to come for Mangala Arati. 1 or 2 days because of intense sickness or whatever, that's understandable. But consistently he doesn't come for a month for no substantial reason, then it will be affecting. It will affect. Right? So deviation causes fall down. Though one is highly advanced. Yajna dana tapah karma pavanani manishinaha. One should not think oneself very advanced simply because he has accepted sannyas order. Are abhi saffron mein aage. No, I'm not obliged to do all these things. No. So if sannyasi has to be so careful, what to speak of a neophyte brahmachari? 9th verse. Read the 9th verse.
The great king Maharaj Bharata began to think, alas, this helpless young deer, by the force of time, an agent of the Supreme Personality of God, has now lost its relatives and friends and has taken shelter of me. It does not know anyone but me, as I have become its father, mother, brother and relative. This deer is thinking in this way, and it was full faith in me. It does not know anyone but me. Therefore, I should not be envious and think that for the deer, my own welfare will be destroyed. I should certainly raise, protect, gratify, and fondle it. When it was taken shelter with me, how can I neglect it? Even though the deer is disturbing my spiritual life, I realize that a helpless person who has taken shelter cannot be neglected. That would be a great fault.
So Bharat Maharaj was so attached to the body and apparent emotions of the deer. What emotions a deer undergoes, a human being technically cannot figure out so much. Right? Whether it is happy or morose or manlila, it's a bit, there's a lot of imagination there. It's not technically correct that the deer or that animal is undergoing certain emotion. There's some imagination also. So Bharat was so attached to the body and he was distracted from what he had learned and realized so far. It was covered. So his compassion was based on pure material sentiments, since it caused him to give up his spiritual practice. What is the... How do I measure whether my compassion towards an animal or another person or another devotee also is on a material platform? We need to understand. Is it intensifying my devotional service? Or at least, is it distracting my devotional service? If it is distracting you from your sadhana, if it is distracting you from your seva, then you need to understand it's a material attachment. Simple. Sometimes, there's an infatuation between devotees also. One devotee is attached to another devotee on a material platform, connecting with material emotions, sentiments. And he will forget his sadhana and then he start thinking about that devotee. And he's not seeing him like a devotee. He's seeing him like a friend or any other person who is more compatible with his external ego or whatever. Oh, in his company, I can be more comfortable. That's fine. You can keep company of people with whom you are comfortable, that's fine. But desiring the association or whatever, company of that person is distracting you from your sadhana and seva, there's something wrong there. Getting right? Sometimes neophyte practitioners may get into this kind of external emotions also, material emotions also. Something called infatuation period. Anyways, point here is, we need to be compassionate, even to the animals also. And that compassion includes feeding them some grass, We are maintaining so many animals here. We have donkeys, we have horses, we have cows, we have dogs, we have human beings. So, there is compassion. We have fishes. There are fishes in our Yamuna. Every day we put that, what is that called? Atta, dough. They come very enthusiastically eat. The whole day you put that only, you forget your 16 rounds, it's a problem. One will become sobri. Atta leke dalayagadu. Manasarovar mein thoda atta, 1 kilo. Then Yamuna mein 1 kilo. Going to Brahmana ghat, 1 kilo. Keshi ghat, 1 kilo. You keep on putting whole day. I'm lover of fishes. They're Yamuna residents. Right? Then one will become sobri. Sobri mani banjayaga. So point is, we need to do the needful. We need to show compassion. But make sure that compassion doesn't distract you from your spiritual practice. That compassion that doesn't distract you from spiritual practice is allowed. And it may not be called material also. One identifies them as Krishna's animals. They are all Krishna's cows. Let me serve these cows. They are all Krishna's fishes. Let me serve them. You start showing compassion or developing any emotion towards another person or an animal or whatever with Krishna in the center, then that is justifiable. Keeping Krishna away from the relationship, you start connecting with him on a purely material platform, material body, material gross body or subtle body, that connection will cause fall down. Simple. Even with other devotees also. Krishna in the center. That's what she says. Kunti says, Sneha Pasha Mimam Chindi Dradham Pandushu Vrishnishu. First she tells Krishna, Krishna, you are, you please stay here. Otherwise my sons, Pandavas, will be affected. Who will protect them if you go away? Then she started thinking, I am asking him to stay here so that my sons can be protected. What to speak of my parents, parental family, Vrishnis? They also should be protected. Say, Krishna, you can go to this Vrishni dynasty. You can give them protection there. Then she started thinking, why am I caught up in these dualities? I am thinking about the welfare of my sons or my parental family, maternal family or whatever, husband's family. I think I am too much caught up in this relationships. So then she says, Sneha Pasha Mimam Chindi Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu. The Sneha Pasha, the bondage of affection that I have for Vrishnis and Pandavas, Pandu sons, please cut it. I don't want that relationship. Because that's a material relationship. But preserve my relationship with these two categories of people on a spiritual platform. They are great devotees. I also want to be a devotee. I want their connection. Their relationship with me as a devotee is very important for my spiritual progress. So, I want that relationship. So, she wants to maintain relationship with Pandavas and Vrishnis on a spiritual platform, not on a material platform. Clear? So, similarly, when we are connecting with other devotees, we need to seek for that, our absorption in Krishna should increase with our interaction with other devotees. We should not be just staying together, scratching each other's back on a material platform without any Krishna element in it. I often give this example. This tree is there. It has so many leaves. On this branch there is one leaf, on that branch there is another leaf. They are not together. Now, if they want to be together, what they need to do? They will be disconnected from the tree. That leaf will drop from there, this leaf will drop from here. These two leaves will come together. They may stay together. They may embrace each other, kiss each other, eat with each other, sleep with each other. They may have a lot of association. How long? The green leaf will become yellow leaf. yellow leaf will become brown leaf, brown leaf will become powder, black powder. You understand? You step on that, it will make sound, and it will, you see down, it's all powder. So the leaf has life as long as it is connected to the tree. Tree is Krishna. Similarly, two devotees may not be together in physical proximity, but they remain fresh, they remain happy, as long as they are connected to this tree of Krishna, tree of Krishna's service, tree of Krishna's devotional service, bhakti yoga. So, one should not aspire to connect with each other in material platform, but one should keep Krishna in the center of relationships. That's the main problem with Bharat Maharaj. He had no association of devotees. Who could tell him, you are getting too much distracted in your japa. You are thinking about the deer only. You should focus on it. There was no one to tell him. That's why association is extremely important. Your question just indicates the importance of association of devotees. Second, caution. There are two aspects of intelligence. Number one, to be able to solve problems on our own. If one is intelligent, without depending on any other person, he will solve the problem on his own. He will identify the problem, he will contemplate on a solution, he will be determined to apply that solution and solve the problem. That's intelligence. And another aspect of intelligence is to understand one's limit of intelligence. Means to understand that I am not capable of solving this problem. My intelligence is not sufficient to handle this problem. I need support. So another aspect of intelligence is to understand that you cannot solve the problem and approach another person who has more intelligence and who can help you solve the problem. When Mother Earth came to Brahmaji seeking for favor, my dear Brahma, please, you should protect me. So many demons are ruling over me, they are tormenting me. Then Brahmaji understood, I can't solve this problem. I don't have the ability to solve this problem. Let all of us go to Kshirasagar, meditate on Krishna. Only Krishna can solve this problem. So Brahmaji is intelligent enough to understand. So earlier also demigods went to Brahmaji, all these demons took away our wealth, what to do? Then Brahmaji chastised them. You fools, you have offended Brihaspati, what will happen to you? So I suggest that you should go to Vishwarup and accept him as your guru. He will teach you Narayan Kavacha, then you will regain your opulence. So Brahmaji sometimes gives solution to the demigods. Sometimes he will not give solution, he will take the demigods to the Supreme Lord and then pray to him, and then Lord will come as an incarnation. We need to understand what problem I can solve, what problem I cannot solve. That's intelligence. It's beyond my capacity. Escalate the matter.
Sometimes there is conflict with two spiritualists. Here one is better and one is spiritual.
Give me an example.
Someone is important work, not attending Mangala. He will think I'll do something spiritual.
It depends. It depends on the particular circumstances one is in. Yeah. He may do something spiritual, but what is more important? this is also right thing, this is also right thing. Which is more right? This is more right is what is prescribed for him to do. But sometimes because of circumstances he may not be able to do. That we need to deal with very sensitivity. We cannot make that exception as a rule. Because of circumstances one may not be able to follow the more right thing. He may do the second right thing. May not be able to do the first right thing. But at your case, I will prepare for the exam, I will not attend Mangalarti. That's not correct. In your case. But after 10 years you handle some responsibility. There, because of circumstantial need, you may have to attend to something during Mangalarti also. Then, fine. It's a circumstantial need. But every day you have to do that, there's a problem. Once in a while, because of emergency, you may have to do it. That's understandable. Makes sense. Sympathy or compassion based on bodily comforts is the cause of one's downfall. Kaikeyi also understood, thought that Bharat, you know, Ram's brother Bharat. Kaikeyi misunderstood, not understood. She misunderstood that if I somehow manage to get the kingdom for Bharat and make him the king, he'll be happy, he'll be ecstatic. She understood, she felt like that. She could not understand the heart of her own son. So because of her misplaced compassion, Bharat Maharaj was not happy. Bharat was not that Bharat, Ram's brother Bharat. I would be more happy to become a servant at the feet of Ram when he is ruling the kingdom than occupying his post. My position is to sit at the feet of Ram when he is sitting on the throne. I can't imagine to sit on his throne. Who told you to come in the middle and get me the kingdom instead of, and send him to forest? Who are you? I abandon you. Like that Bharat Maharaj chastised and blasphemed Kaikeyi also. He kind of rejected mother only. See? So one need not assume what the other person might want. Because of your material emotion, you may be thinking that this person is more comfortable by doing this, by if I do this to him. But it's not necessary. Anything disconnected from Krishna is heavily influenced by material emotions. So one needs to be very cautious. If one is actually sympathetic to the fallen, suffering humanity, he should try to elevate people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. Bharat became very sympathetic towards the deer, but he forgot that it was impossible for him to elevate a deer to spiritual consciousness. After all, it's an animal. How can you make preaching karna, fine, start preaching. Then you find some dogs on the street. I need to preach to these dogs. I need to make these dogs chant Hare Krishna. Lord Chaitanya made tigers chant Hare Krishna. He made tigers and deers kiss each other in ecstasy of Sankirtan. I should also do like that. I will make these dogs chant Hare Krishna at any cost. I will invest my time. 24 hours I'll sit with them only. I'll make a japa circle out of these dogs, give them feedback, and I'll also chant with them. I'll give my association. I'll chant 64 rounds for them, not 16. Impossible. Very difficult. You're not Lord Chaitanya, please understand that. You can induce animals in Jharkhand forest to chant, but I'm not sure whether you can induce dogs of Galtare to chant Hare Krishna and dance in Sankirtan. Give them some prasad. Focus on human beings. That makes sense, right? Dinmandubra, what is your opinion? Focusing on human beings is a better proposal than making the dogs dance in Sankirtan. Nay, dogs, we need... That's best, correct. You got the right conclusion. Give some prasadam to dogs, let them eat, okay? And you start focusing on human beings. That's how you do preaching, right? So, it's very dangerous to sacrifice one's sadhana simply to take care of an animal. As far as material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. However, by the grace of Krishna, we may raise a person to spiritual consciousness if we ourselves follow rules and regulations. we can influence or we can inspire other people to practice bhakti to the extent we have bhakti in us. You can't just chant 16 rounds and instruct other people to chant 64 rounds. You're doing 8 rounds. अरे 16 माला करना है, 16 माला कितना माला कर रहा हूँ मैं, 8 माला कर रहा हूँ, मेरे लिए पर्याप्त है. I am satisfied with 8. You chant 16, right? So that, yeah, sometimes it may work also. The people whom you are preaching to will become more advanced than you also. That can happen. But generally, people are more inspired when you do something and then tell them to do. Right? And sometimes out of humility, one may say, I could not do it. Maybe you may try to do it, something like that. That's a different case. So Maya is when we equate compassion to the body and mind and compassion to the soul, same. You show compassion on the body of a person or mind of a person and say that I am showing compassion on the soul. Something wrong. You may try to pacify the mind of another devotee. You may try to help the devotee when he is sick, his body is not functioning properly. And that's ultimately to help him to recover and then come to his spiritual sadhana in a regular way. So that is different. But you can't equate one's sentimental attachment to others' body and others' mind and equate that to compassion on the soul. Right? To facilitate one's absorption in devotional service, we may sometimes have to attend to another person's body and mind. But that cannot take first priority over this compassion on the soul. Next, 10th verse, read.
Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered.
So, Prabhupada writes that philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's unchangeable material conditions. So, the material conditions are often unchangeable. They are already established by superior administration according to one's own karma. Don't try to get into that. The only benefit we can render to the suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. That is compassion on spirit. So there should be a proper balance. Tallabhyate dukkhavadanyata sukam kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. So in the name of being transcendental and focusing on spiritual things, one cannot be hard-hearted to another person's material problems. Right? So this is material problem. You are not this body. Someone is experiencing, say, some physical illness. You can't just tell them that you are not this. Tenth verse we are discussing. Sometimes in preaching, we may hear the problems of other people. When we are understanding that we are getting affected by the problem, we are not giving them solution, but we are getting affected. Just escalate the matter to another senior person. Right? So, compassion has to be exhibited according to one's bandwidth. Prabhupada says that tiger is also Krishna's energy. You can't go and embrace a tiger. That will become your last embrace. Last hug of this life. So, read 11th.
Due to attachment for the deer, Maharaj Bharata lay down with it, walked about with it, bathed with it, and even ate with it. Thus his heart became bound to the deer in
the Next 11th also you read. 12.
When Maharaj Bharata wanted to enter the forest to collect kusa grass, flowers, wood, leaves, fruits, roots and water, he could hear that dogs, jackals, tigers and other ferocious animals might kill the deer. He would therefore always take the deer with him when entering the forest.
So Bharat Maharaj would take the deer. He is so attached. When, for example, somebody is attached to phone, he will take the phone everywhere. He goes inside the altar doing aarti, phone hai baju mein. Right? So, something like that. You are attached to something, you carry it everywhere. But you will
take phone.
So, some people are detached, some people are attached. So, now, if Bharat Maharaj at his level, if he became an animal, because of attachment to an animal, what to speak of people who have no Krishna consciousness in their life and they are attached to animals? They will pakka definitely become cats and dogs in the next life. Somebody has pet dog and he is so attached to the dog, and Prabhupada says in one of his lectures, I will leave my property in the name of my dog. All my property has to be given to the dog. Then Prabhupada writes, yes sir, you are giving property to your dog, but you are becoming dog, what about that? Right? So people will write in that will, right? Because they didn't have sufficient good relationship with their sons or daughters or other family members. They have developed so much of affection to the dog, which never spoke to them. Many times we have good rapport with people who never speak to us, who never give any feedback or anything. And we become a little irritated with other people who may speak. Right? So, the relationships in this material world are so superficial that it has become like a conditioning on the part of the conditioned soul to invite or welcome a relationship that pampers one's false ego and reject and blaspheme a relationship that might crush one's false ego. He is pampering my false ego, he is my dearest friend. And he keeps on attacking my false ego, he is my worst enemy. That comfort and discomfort on an egoistic platform has become the basis of relationship in this material world. One has to come out of this. Ego is not the center of relationship. Krishna should be the center of a relationship. If ego is the center, if one who pampers my ego becomes my dear friend, he can crush your ego at any point. Then one will become worst enemies. This, who are they? Devayani Sharmishta. You know their story? In the 9th canto that comes, two girls. One is the daughter of Vrishaparva. Vrishaparva, a demon king. And Devayani is the daughter of Sukracharya, the guru of demons. They both were friends till they entered the lake. After they came out of the lake, their clothes were exchanged. From that point, they became lifelong enemies. You know the whole story. You know the story? You don't know. So these two girls went to take bath. By the time they came out, by mistake, their clothes were exchanged. And this Devayani, who was a Brahmana girl, she started complaining that I am a Brahmana, I am the daughter of a Brahmana, how dare you wear my clothes? You are a Kshatriya, you are an inferior caste girl. People from inferior caste, how dare they can touch the clothes or wear the clothes of someone from superior caste? Then that Kshatriya girl, Sharmishta, she also, her ego was scratched. So she started saying that your father is surviving because of the mercy of my father. He will accept charity from my father, and that's how you people are maintaining yourself. You are living at the cost of our compassion. Well, and if I touch your cloth, what is the problem? Right? In fact, I am more superior, I am great. You should be feel fortunate. You should be feeling fortunate that I have touched your clothes or what. She didn't say all that, but it's that. And the argument went on. And Sukracharya's daughter said that your father will come and take blessings from my father. That's why he's prosperous. Otherwise, he's useless. Like that, in the name of their father, they started fighting with each other. They have artificially attributed all their father's glory upon themselves. They became the representatives of Kshatriya caste and Brahmana caste and started fighting with each other. And finally, they became lifelong enemies. You know the whole story. Devayani wanted Sarmishtha to become the maid servant of her. So, the whole story is like that. So, since this was the case with Bharat Maharaj, what is to be said of people who are not advanced in spiritual life, but are attached to cats and dogs? Okay. Unless we increase our faith in the Supreme Lord, we shall be attracted to many other things. That is the cause of our material bondage. Read the 13th verse.
When entering the forest, the animals would appear very attractive to Maharaj Bharat due to his childish behavior. Maharaj Bharat would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap or when sleeping on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal.
So Bharat would walk with the deer. And on the pathway, if there is a muddy path and there is a path with nice grasses, so he will walk on the muddy path. He will make the deer walk on the grassy path. So deer's feet should get some proper cushion. I can take that austerity. If one is infatuated, he may accept all kinds of inconveniences to please the other person. So that's the nature of love. But love on a material platform will degrade another person. Love on a spiritual platform will elevate a person. If that much affection is given to other Vaishnavas and Guru and Krishna, and if one accepts voluntarily inconveniences upon oneself to give comforts to Krishna, Guru and other Vaishnavas, they are spiritually elevating. But out of material affection, material emotion, if he gives the similar comforts to other people who are not spiritually elevated, then that will become the cause of one's degradation. One who is serious in advancing his spiritual life should be very cautious not to become attached to anything but Krishna. Sometimes in preaching we have to accept many material activities, but we should remember that everything is for Krishna. Then there is no chance of our being victimized by material activities. Remember that we are doing things for Krishna, then one will not be victimized. If we don't remember that we are doing this, dealing with matter for Krishna, then one will become a victim. 14th verse.
When Maharaj Bharat was actually worshipping the Lord or was engaged in some ritualistic ceremony, although his activities were unfinished, he would still at intervals get up and see where the deer was. In this way, he would look for it. And when he could see that the deer was comfortably situated, his mind and heart would be very satisfied. And he would restore his blessings upon the deer, saying, "My dear calf, may you be happy in all respects."
So, Bharat was distracted during rituals. The very fact that his mind was distracted from worship and a mere show of worship is going on, that will not benefit him and that is the sign of fall down. He had to get up at intervals to look for the deer, whether the deer was comfortably seated or not. Which is Hare Krishna? He's doing Hare Krishna in which way? So that kind of distracted rituals are only signs of his fall down. So it's basically misusing one's free will. Even if we are very advanced, one always has a free will to make, to prioritize something other than Krishna, over Krishna. Oh, I think Krishna is not the priority now. So and so material relation or material, desire or task is priority now, like that. Maya will give so much of temptations, and along with temptations, she will also give justifications. Yes, Maya is tempting, and it will also give justification. We can do this also, we can do that also. So that will distract one from one's regular spiritual practices. 15th verse.
If Bharat Maharaj sometimes could not see that deer, his mind would be very agitated. He would become like a miser who, having obtained some riches, had lost them and had then become very unhappy. When the deer was gone, he would be filled with anxiety and would lament due to separation. Thus he would become illusion and speak as follows.
So agitation, anxiety, lamentation, in separation, very important. So Bharat Maharaj was in separation from the deer. Why? Sometimes the deer may go out of sight. Sometimes we may be attached to another person or an object. Person we'll see. But the other person is not as attached to us as we are attached to him or her. For example, Ajamil was so attached to his son Narayana, and he was lying on his deathbed, and out of intense anxiety when Yamadutas were coming to capture him, he says, "Narayana, Narayana, come here, come here, come." And that fellow is playing somewhere. After all, he's a boy, small child. He's just playing with some toy somewhere, and he's not bothered with that his father is calling. He cannot understand the feelings and emotions of this father only. Same thing with deer also. After all, it's an ignorant animal. And Bharat is so attached, and he's thinking about the deer so much, and that deer is in his own world. He just went outside. So Bharat Maharaj was searching for where is the deer? And then the deer has no clue that someone is having so much affection for me and he's searching for me. So we need to understand this also, that we may be attached to a person on a material platform, but if the other person may not be attached to, will not be attached to us similarly, it's useless. Our time and investing so much of time and energy and mental strength on that person, on that relationship, is extremely useless. If only we had developed that much attraction and then utilized that much time for other spiritual activities, we would have progressed so much. For example, Bilwa Mangal Thakur, he went to Chintamani, right? Crossing the river in floods, touching some dead body. That's the same story, right? And he tried to climb on the window, touching a snake, holding a snake, etc., etc. So he was stinking by the time he managed to reach there. And then, my God, you risked your life to attain me. If only you had this much affection for Krishna, you would have attained salvation long back. So then she became his guru. So, Bhartruhari, Dhaktam cha tam cha madanam cha imam cha mam cha. You know Bhartruhari story? You don't know. You know? Shall I tell? Bhartruhari is a great king. He is so attached to his wife. Once a sage came and gave him a ring, very beautiful ring, and says, "This is very special ring. You can gift it to a person whom you like the most." So he gave that ring to his wife, queen, and told the same thing to the wife also. The sage gave me this beautiful ring. He said, "This has to be gifted to a person whom we love the most." Then the queen took it happily, and she didn't love the king the most. She had a paramour. So she gifted that ring to that paramour. Told the same thing. that this ring has to be gifted to someone whom you love the most. And the paramour doesn't love the king the most. Queen the most. The paramour had another girlfriend. He gifted it to that girlfriend. And that girlfriend of the paramour doesn't love this paramour the most. She loves the king the most. She loves Bhartrihari. She took the ring and gave it to Bhartrihari. And Bhartrihari said, this is my ring. I gave this ring to my queen and it ended up in my hands. And he traced it back, the whole thing. Okay, there is one woman, one man, another woman and me. Like four. There is a triangle love story, there is a rectangle love story or square love story, whatever you may call. Then he felt that dhiktamcha madanamcha imamcha mamcha. To hell with her, the queen, to hell with him, her paramour, to hell with this lady, to hell with the cupid, to hell with this whole business of lust only, I just give up. Out of attachment to his queen, Bhartrihari wrote 100 verses of Shringara Satka. Shringara Satka means very romantic verses describing all the conjugal, so-called conjugal affairs of man and woman, lusty affairs. He wrote Shringara Satka. And because of this whole affair, he gave up the kingdom, he gave up the queen, he became renunciant, and he wrote Vairagya Shataka. 100 verses glorifying renunciation. Right? Like that. We may be attached to someone on a material platform, but they may not be attached to us in a similar manner. So it's not worth investing our time and energy and valuable resources and everything on that relationship. It's not worth it. Better focus on that. Focus on Krishna, Guru, other Vaishnavas. So, Rupa Goswami offered this prayer. He would be as naturally attracted to Lord's service as young men and young women are naturally attracted to each other. So, Rupa Goswami offered this prayer that when young boy and young girl love each other, they can't stay away. Their WhatsApp is continuously on. Right? Although they are sitting in the class also, they are sitting in this also, wherever, they are constantly messaging each other, chatting with each other. I don't know, I never observed or I never did it, but I am just, it could be the possibility. Right? They are constantly conscious of their lovers. Just like devotee tries to be Krishna conscious, and they are spontaneously lover conscious. Right? So, especially when they are very young, especially before marriage, especially before union, right? Especially as long as there is no jagada, there is no quarrel between them. So, till that time, they are extremely conscious of each other. As long as they are beautiful, as long as they are young, not old. So, as long as another party doesn't come and intrude into their relationship. So till that extent, they are conscious of each other. They may do anything for each other. So, I want similar affection for you, my dear Lord. That is the prayer of Rupa Goswami. Now, when deer went away, Bharat Maharaj started lamenting in separation from the deer. That lamentation is there in the next half. I think we should take a break. It's almost 12. Okay.
Bharat Maharaj would think, alas, the deer is now helpless. I am now very unfortunate and my mind is like a cunning hunter, for it is always filled with cheating propensities and cruelty. The deer has put its faith in me just as a good man who has a natural interest in good behavior forgets the misdemeanor of a cunning fan and puts his faith in him. Although I have proved faithless, it is dear, return and place its faith in me.
He says, I am negligent, the deer has a noble heart. Okay. Actually, he has a noble heart. He is king. So he is imposing that. Atmavan manyate jagat, you know. He is imposing his noble nature on the deer. So, deer will return putting faith in me. So, deer has nothing to do with Bharat Maharaj, technically speaking. And deer is an animal, it cannot even recognize. And a relationship between a man and animal is very rare. Very rarely that can be established. Generally, relationship and emotional exchange happens between living entities of same species, generally. So, Bharat was noble and exalted. He thought himself unworthy to protect. That's why it went. I could not protect. Isliye chala gaya. Not like that. Okay. Yes, yes. Actually, I don't know if there is any devotional import of that story. I also heard only, but I didn't hear Prabhupada quoting it or read Prabhupada explaining it and all. I'm not sure if that verse, that story may be quoted to glorify the quality of charity or the dharmic nature of kring. Just really, in Bhagavatam it's not there. Rantidev's story is there, but not Sibi Maharaj's story. Sibi also it comes somewhere as an example, not the entire story. It, maybe in some purport it's quoted. I didn't read much elaborate explanation on it. You can note down all these extra things, na? Someone can do research and then find out. When you come to your project, who will do this project? Who is interested? You take. C.B. Maharaj, story. Do more research. Okay? You and Vakreshwar Pran Prabhu, make a team. C.B. Maharaj story. Keep writing somewhere, not here and there. All the unanswered questions or to be explored questions in Vidyapit classes should be researched by Vidyapit students. And you make answers for your future batches. Okay, fine. Read 17th verse.
Alas, is it possible that I shall again see this material animal protected by the Lord and fearless of tigers and other animals? Shall I again see him wandering in the garden eating soft grass?
Shall I see it again, protected by the Lord? So, when the beloved person goes away, out of your sight, you always desire that I want to see it again. From a materialistic point of view, such kind of thoughts may appear very laudable. But from spiritual point of view, Bharat was actually falling from his exalted spiritual position. Unnecessarily becoming attached to an animal, thus degrading himself to accept animal body. Arjuna also had that kind of similar feelings. Yes, chakshana viyogena loko hiya priyadarshanaha uktena rahito hiyesha mrtakah prochyate yatha. Just a moment separation from Krishna will render all universes void. Vanchitoham maharaja harina bandhurupina yename apahritam tejo deva vismapanam chet. So like that, Arjuna was feeling literally empty and devoid of any kind of excitement in life in the absence of Krishna. Similar feelings Bharat Maharaj is undergoing, but object is not Krishna, object is a deer. That's the problem. So one needs to have the right object for one's love and affection. No point having some stupid objects as objects of one's love and affection. Anyways, you have to invest your love. To love and be loved is the need, is the innate nature of every living entity. But if you invest that loving propensity on some unworthy people or unworthy objects, that will cause ruination. But if you invest that same love and feelings and affection on Krishna, Guru and other Vaishnavas and Krishna's paraphernalia, then that's a great cause of elevation. 18th verse read.
I do not know what the deer might have been taken, eaten by oat or a dove or by boars that flock together or the tiger who travels alone.
Next.
Alas, when the sun rises, all auspicious things begin. Unfortunately, they have not begun for me. The sun god is the Vedas personified, but I am working of Vedic principles. The sun god is now setting, yet the poor animal who trusted in me since its mother died has not returned.
So, sun, when sun rises, there is auspiciousness everywhere. Suryodai. But sun is setting now, deer has not yet returned. Whole day passed and then deer has not yet returned. There is no, auspiciousness for me only. He is regretting like that. So the position of sun god is described in the verse. Okay, next. From 20th verse onwards, we see the symptoms of Bharat Maharaj's illusion. What all he undergoes and what are his feelings and emotions in the absence of deer. Yeah, read.
That deer is exactly like a prince. When will it return? When will it again display its personal activities, which are so pleasing? When will it again pacify a wounded heart like mine? I certainly must have no pious assets, otherwise the deer would have returned by now.
When will it display its pleasing personal activities? There is no personal activity there. The deer is in its own world. What an animal does out of ignorance, that's what the deer is doing. And he is getting attracted to it. And he is thinking of its personal activity. It is reciprocating, it's displaying, it's very pleasing, pleasant, attractive. That is his imagination. When there is infatuation, right, I was telling, there is something called infatuation period. It's not exactly love. Boys and girls may fall in love. That's not actually love, it's infatuation. So, that may exist for 3 to 6 weeks or maybe little more depending on the circumstances. So during that infatuation period, the person's love for another person will only increase day by day, moment by moment. It will not decrease. Boy loves a girl or girl loves a boy. They lose all propensity of fault finding only. Although whole world can see faults in their lovers, but they cannot see any fault in that lover. No fault. Although the girl is looking like a donkey, the boy thinks that she is the supremest apsara, just descended from heavenly planets. Although the boy looks like a buffalo, the girl will think that he must be some gandharva, descended from some loka, some higher planets. Although their voice are like frogs, they hear only music in each other's voice. So that is infatuation. They can't see any faults. So once somebody's mind is just caught in one object out of material affection or attraction or infatuation, although that object has hundreds of shortcomings, one will want that only. Somebody just loved, say, iPhone. Even if you give him iPhone, he will not take that. I want that only. I want this only. I want this. But he doesn't have camera, no problem. I want that only. So like that, people will get so infatuated. Although from an absolute point of view, the objects of their affection are useless. Right? That's the nature of infatuation. And one's energy levels will increase. One's sleep will reduce. One's eating will reduce. One becomes hyperactive in that infatuation period. When one's heart is filled with love and affection for another person, he is constantly seeking an opportunity to exhibit and express that love and affection towards the other person. So that makes him really go crazy. He cannot focus on any other activity. Aisa hua na? Nahi, nahi hua na? Nahi hua tha. Otherwise you will not be here. If that had happened, then you would not have been here. Right? So ideally, that kind of infatuation should happen with Krishna. It doesn't happen with Krishna, it happens with other people, for materialistic people. It didn't happen with anyone, that's why we ended up here. We are trying to cultivate that infatuation for Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. Same mantra. Even if we are bored, we chant that mantra only. Okay, one day that infatuation may come for Krishna. Like that. 21. Read.
Alas, the small deer, while playing with me and seeing me henning meditation with closed eyes, could circumambulate me due to anger arising from love, and would fearfully touch me with the points of his soft horns, which felt like drops of water.
So, Bharat Maharaj's feigning meditation, that means false meditation. False meditation means he's meditating, his eyes are closed, apparently he's meditating, but mind is somewhere else. The object of meditation is something else. It's like we chant Hare Krishna sometimes, but our mind is somewhere else. It's like that. Or sometimes we may sit in class, but our focus is not on Bhagavatam or on the speaker's words. Its mind is somewhere else. Mind may be in some other loka. So that is called feigning meditation. Out of affection, anyone can be addressed as anything. Here, Bharat Maharaj happens to be a king, and king's son is prince. So he's addressing the deer as prince. Deer is like prince. Deer is not prince, it's an animal. So he's enjoying deer's angry love. Sometimes the deer will come and contaminate the sacrificial ingredients. He's doing some sacrifice, the deer will come and touch with its mouth. Contaminate ho gaya. And generally a brahmana or a devotee who is very strict in his standards of worship will not allow such contamination to happen. But Bharat Maharaj will become angry with the deer, apparently. But internally he's enjoying and relishing his activities, but externally he will become angry. And when the deer, hey, why are you contaminating? And the deer will go and then go sit somewhere else. And Bharat Maharaj will enjoy. How cute the deer looks. How beautiful it looks when it is angry. Its loving anger is very relishable to me. He just keeps enjoying. What happened to his sacrifice, that became secondary for him. That's what he is explained in the 22nd verse. He was constantly thinking of the activities of the deer, forgetting that such meditation and diversion of attention was killing his progress in spiritual achievement. He could understand that the deer was contaminating, but his chastisement of the deer was superficial. If your chastisement is superficial, the other person who is being chastised will not get any message only. Sometimes mother becomes strict with the child and complains father, hey, see, your son is doing like this. Oh, say again, I will beat him. And the father will then do like this. And he is only clapping behind the back of the boy. He is not beating the boy. And the boy will feel encouraged to do that mischief more. Yeah. Of course, I am telling one example which is not complete. Don't stretch this example. Because when the mother also becomes strict with the boy and the father also becomes strict, the boy will have no shelter. This has different perspectives. But what I am saying is, if the chastisement is superficial, the person who is being chastised may not get the message. Or he may be encouraged to do that mistake again. Or he may not understand the seriousness of that mistake. It will happen. So basically, he is not focused on his sacrifice. 23rd verse, read. 22nd, I just explained. 22nd, you read. 23rd, sorry.
After speaking like a madman in this way, Maharaj Bharat got up and went outside. Seeing the footprints of the deer on the ground, he praised the footprints out of love, saying, O unfortunate Bharat, your austerities and penances are very insignificant compared to the penance and austerities undergone by this earth planet. Due to the earth's severe penances, the footprints of this deer, which are small, beautiful, most auspicious and soft, are imprinted on the surface of this fortunate planet. This series of footprints show a person like me, who am buried due to loss of the deer, how the animal has passed into the forest, and how I can regain my lost wealth. By these footprints, this land was become a proper place for Brahmana.
is thinking that earth has done austerities to get the footprints of deer. Vrindavanam sakhibhuvo vitanoti kirtim yad devaki sutapadam bujalabdha lakshmi. All the gopis are saying in Venu Gita that this land of Vrindavan is so fortunate because it attained the wealth of Krishna's footprints. Because in Vrindavan, Krishna walks barefoot, but in other places he may wear slippers. So when the earth is imprinted with the footprints of Krishna, that's considered the greatest fortune of Mother Earth. So although a devotee of Krishna, Bharat Maharaj forgot this verse momentarily in this circumstance, and he started praising the footprints of the deer instead of footprints of Krishna. That's a big problem. So when a person becomes overly involved in loving affairs, he forgets himself as well as others, and he forgets how to act and how to speak. It's all craziness. So next, 24th verse. No, blind love. A father may be naming his blind son as Padmalochan or Nayanasukh. Nayanasukh means the happiness enjoyed by eyes. And this fellow doesn't have eyes only. What happiness he'll enjoy? Out of his love and affection, he may put his with the son's name as Nayanasukh or Padmalochan, lotus-eyed person. He has no eyes only. What lotus eyes he'll have? So it's all blind love. Love is blind, they say, right? The blindness also includes not seeing any shortcomings in the beloved. Although there are hundreds of shortcomings, the whole world can see. It's purely on material platform. Most of the Hollywood, Bollywood, Tollywood, Mollywood, Collywood songs are of this theme only. Unduly praising the lover. Okay, anyways, I'll not get into all this. I'll not describe all those songs now. Next, 24th verse.
Maharaj Bharat continued to speak like a madman, seeing over his head the dark marks in the rising moon, which resembled a deer. He said, can it be that moon, who is so kind to an unhappy man, might also be kind upon my deer, knowing that it was strayed from home and has become motherless? This moon has given the deer shelter near itself, just to protect it from the fearful attacks of the lion.
He saw the moon, and the dark marks on the moon resembled the deer. He started thinking that moon has given shelter to the deer. Wherever you see, it's all Krishna. Object of bhava change. Object of bhava change now. So that there are dark marks on the moon that resemble the deer. So he is glorifying the moon for protecting the deer. Next, 25th verse.
After pursuing the moon sign, Maharaj Bharata continued, speaking like a crazy person. He said, the deer's son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if enflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like the lily of the land, is now burning. Seeing me so distressed, the moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness.
So in Ayurveda, it is said that if you gargle water and splash on a person, his high fever will reduce. His high fever. That's not mentioned, I don't know. Maybe whole body. So the moon, here Bharat is imagining that moon is splashing his gargled water on him from his mouth, and so that his fever can be reduced. Like that. You can ask in our Ayurveda. Ayurveda you can check. Okay. In separation from my son, the cool rays of moon are becoming hot. That's another perspective. Like that, Bharat actually, as we discussed, Bharat did not have any association. So when he's lamenting for the deer, someone could have told. Many times now, although we are in the association of devotees, we don't take advantage of that association. We may suffer our own problems
अरे आई विल नॉट शेयर विथ अदर पीपल, अरे सोल्यूशन देगा या विल ही he will make fun of me or he will give me solution or he will share that with 100 other people. So there is some insecurity because we are unable to develop the trust in the relationships. So there is insensitivity in dealings. There is oversensitivity to feedbacks. All this will happen. So, but association is there. Then there is a possibility that we can overcome our shortcomings. So Maya can incrementally or abruptly divert our attention from the pure path. But with sincere hearing and association of sincere devotees, one can develop proper discrimination. And when Maya is incrementally or abruptly diverting us from the spiritual path, this association of devotees can protect us, can remind us, oh, Maya is diverting you, take care, like that, devotees can say. Okay, 26th verse, read.
Sukadeva Goswami continued.
Or I will read, no problem, it's a very long thing. Sukadeva Goswami said, Bharat Maharaj fell down due to fruitive results of past deeds. That's how the verse says. Otherwise, how could he have been attracted to deer after giving up association of son, family as stumbling blocks on spiritual path? He gave up his family, kingdom, wealth, prosperity and all of this just like a person gives up stool. You go to toilet, pass stool. Will you go back and see how much did I pass, like what is the weight, what is the texture, what is the whatever analysis. Even sometimes we have to send our samples, stool samples and urine samples to the laboratory hospital. To collect that stool and put it in the dabba, it's so disgusting many times, right? It's disgusting to touch our own stool and collect it and then see it for a little longer time. Put it with the left hand somewhere, okay, and then I'm done. Put it in a cover. You don't have to give the darshan of it. Okay, let it be sent to the laboratory, like that. So, after passing stool, one becomes extremely detached to that stool. There is absolutely no attachment to that stool in any gentleman. Right? Only pigs become attached to that stool. So Bharat Maharaj has left all his material attachments like that. After giving up all that attachments, he is attached to a deer. It's very surprising, isn't it? It's too contradictory. This is all because of fruitive results of his past deeds. That's what Sukadeva Goswami says. We'll understand it more. Eventually, insurmountable death approaches Bharat Maharaj. And that death is compared to a venomous snake that enters the hole created by a mouse. A mouse may create a hole for its sustenance, but snakes do not do all that. It just enters that hole, eats the mouse and then stays there. And the ant hill, they say. It's an ant hill, but inside there are snakes. Ants will create a hill and snakes are inside. So this happens. So, now we need to understand this in great detail. How can death we understand, but what is this Bharat Maharaj falling down due to fruitive results of past deeds? What is the power of bhakti? Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. We hear that in Brahma Samhita. Karma is burnt to ashes when someone has bhakti. And what to speak of a person whose bhakti went up to bhava level? It's where is the question that he will be affected by karma? So Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. Bharat was brought up by Rishabhdev. He is the son of Supreme Personality of Godhead. He got trained by Rishabhdev. He is worshipping Lord Hari at Gandaki River. So how can a devotee be affected by his past misconduct and vicious activities? Let's understand this carefully. In Bharat Maharaj's case, Bharat purposefully became over addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. So there is a misuse of one's own free will there. Second point. To immediately rectify this mistake, for a short time, Bharat was awarded a deer body as a punishment. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam jajatyante kalevaram. So, Bharat, whatever thoughts you have at the time of death, you will attain the same destination. That's what Krishna says. Apparently, Krishna applied that formula. Oh, you thought about deer, you become a deer. But that Krishna can apply to somebody, to any regular person. But not to someone at the stage of Bharat Maharaj. But in Bharat Maharaj's case also, Krishna applied that formula. You thought about deer, you become a deer. But why did he do so? That is just to, third point, that is just to increase Bharat Maharaj's desire for mature devotional service. You have been doing devotional service so wonderfully till now, but as of now you are not cautious enough to protect you and safeguard you from some distractions. Like deer distraction. So you are not alert enough to increase your alertness, to intensify your desire for mature devotional service. I am giving you this punishment. When a severe punishment is given for a smaller mistake, then one will take it more seriously and he will not commit that mistake again. For example, your pencil is there, your pen, give me this pen. So, I heard this example for Radhesham Prabhu. Sometimes it just comes out like this, in some pens. You want to put it back. It's not holding your pocket, you want to put it back. For that, you need to bend it little deeper inside. Technically, you need to bend up to this point only. This much is sufficient, but you need to bend little inside, deep inside, so that it will become tight there. Right? So, mistake is this much. Punishment become this much, then he will not do this mistake again. To rectify the mistake and to intensify his longing, some people are given that punishment. Sometimes the small children are doing some mischief in the classroom and the teacher will say, stand up on the bench. I don't know if that kind of punishments may happen in these days. In our childhood they used to happen. Sometimes the teacher will say, go out of the classroom and stand there. Or kneel down there. Or do a wall chair. You know wall chair? There is no chair, you have to sit. Leaning back on your wall. So that means there is a lot of pressure on your knees. So that kind of punishments are given to children. So nowadays I am not sure. That may be seen as child abuse. No punishment nowadays. Punishment free zone. I don't know. Anyways, because some people also misused that, some immature teachers also took advantage and unnecessarily abused children. They may have to do. We don't know. No comments on it. But sometimes that kind of punishment may be given. Just by checking out the student out of the classroom and he's just doing some mischief in the classroom, say making some noise, he would be given a warning or chastisement and then he could have, he would be made to sit there. But if the child is sent out of the classroom, 1 hour he is standing outside, 45 minutes or 1 hour, so he will feel very embarrassed. Intention, I am saying. The child will feel embarrassed and the next time he will be more alert in the class and he would never go out of the classroom if he is a disciplined child. So that way. Sometimes an intense punishment is given to some person with a mood to rectify that person. Right. What is the proof that this is intense punishment? Krishna, he has made him an animal. Point is, Bharat Maharaj was awarded an animal body, but he did not get animal consciousness. He was very anxious to get out of the deer body. Which deer is anxious to get out of the deer body? But Bharat Maharaj was anxious. And this indicates that his affection for devotional service was intensified. Understand, dear Bharat is more spiritually advanced than this King Bharat. So Krishna protected the spiritual progress of Bharat Maharaj, but externally he gave a punishment also to Bharat Maharaj. And which deer will get a Brahmana body in the next birth? This deer Bharat got. Bharat Maharaj got a deer body. Still he has got that human consciousness. He had the remembrance of the past life even in the deer's body. He performed a devotional service. And in the next body, next birth, he became a Brahmana, Jada Bharat. And he continued devotional service there, that way. So much so that he was quickly to attain perfection in a Brahmana's body in the next life. So it may appear that he underwent this punishment because of past karma, but not. But he was just offered personal, there's a personal arrangement of Krishna to bring him to pure devotional service. It may have a semblance of prarabdha karma, but it is technically not prarabdha karma. So, 27th verse, Bharat Maharaj sees the deer by his side at the time of death and he gives up that body to get a deer body. And Bharat Maharaj remembers his past life in the deer body also. I just summarized 27th verse. I'm reading now 27th purport. Due to his being elevated to topmost platform of devotional service, Bharat did not forget his past life incidents. The special benediction saved him from further deterioration. If Bharat Maharaj was also given animal consciousness along with animal body, then that is like a severe punishment. That is effect of past karma or whatever you can say. But it's not like that. Due to his past devotional service, he became determined to finish his devotional service even in deer body. Due to his willful neglect of devotional service, a devotee may be punished for a short time, but he again revives his devotional service and returns home back to Godhead. So, we need to understand that any progress made on the path of Krishna consciousness is eternal. The good news for all sadhakas is, whatever genuine service, sincere service they have rendered to Krishna, went into their eternal bank account, and that will never be lost. And the bad news is, one can lose access to that bank account at any point if one is not alert. This good news and bad news, we need to be aware. Considering the good news, we should feel encouraged, and that increases our faith. Considering the bad news, we need to be more cautious and conscious while performing devotional service and not get spaced out. Okay, because Maya can bewilder even great learned sages. There is one verse, Vadanti Vishvam Kavayasmanashwaram Pashyanti Chadhyatma Vido Vipaschitaha Tathabi Muhiyanti Tavaja Mayaya Suvismitam Krityamajam Natosmitam. Even great learned sages who are great preachers, they are so knowledgeable about this material world, about the futility of everything in this material world, and they can even convince about the temporary nature of this world. They can convince others also. But tathabi muhiyanti, even they can also be bewildered by the Lord's Maya. So all this happens because of inattentiveness in one's transcendental position. So one needs to very cautiously execute devotional service by rigidly following regulative principles. Because a little inattention will cause havoc. Example is Bharat Maharaj. This Bharat Maharaj example we need to see from two perspectives. One from a divine point of view, another from a human point of view. From a divine point of view, we need to understand that Bharat, in Bharat Maharaj's life, Krishna personally orchestrated this punishment. It's something very significant is happening between Krishna and Bharat Maharaj, at their level. But from human point, from sadhaka point of view, we need to see that we need to be extremely cautious and alert. So the challenge that we have in our devotional service, in our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, is that we need to learn from all these great personalities what not to do. Right? We need to learn from their mistakes what not to do. There are some great personalities which are giving good examples. We can learn from them what to do. But when great souls do mistakes, we need to understand what not to do. And without offending them. Yes, what he has done is a mistake. So I should not repeat that mistake, but I should not blaspheme him or criticize him or offend him for doing that mistake. I need to learn my personal lesson. I need to see that mistake as a mistake. I need to learn a personal lesson from that mistake. And at the same time, I should not offend that person. Three things are very important when we are discussing the mistakes of great souls. Otherwise, we may end up offending. So, unless we see that mistake as a mistake, we will not learn anything for our personal application. And if we don't see the divine perspective, Krishna's intervention there, we may consider that devotee ordinary. Right? So, we need to simultaneously learn application point for our side, for our practical application, and we should also not offend that person seeing the Krishna's hand there, seeing Krishna's intervention there. If we see only Krishna's hand, we may not learn anything for our personal application. And if we see only human perspective, we may offend the devotee. We need to have this balance. Very important. Lord is always prepared to excuse his devotee, but if a devotee takes advantage of the Lord's leniency and purposefully commits mistakes again and again, the Lord will certainly punish him by letting him fall down into the clutches of illusory energy. So willful neglect, purposeful committing mistakes. So these are the words used by Prabhupada. 28th verse, read. What's the time now? We'll do after. Read 28th verse.
Although in the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj, due to his rigid devotional service in his past life, could understand the cause of his birth in that body. Considering his past and present life, he constantly repented his activities, speaking in the following way.
So, with deer will lament for his mistakes. Animals cannot have regretful attitude. Like that animals will not think. But Bharat Maharaj understood, I have got this deer body because of my mistake. So, this is a special condition for a devotee. Even if he attains the body of a non-human, by the grace of the Lord, he further advances in devotional service. Whether by remembering his past life or by natural causes. So he laments. Read 29th verse, his lamentation.
In the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj began to lament, what misfortune! I have fallen from the path of self-realizing. I gave up my real sons, wife and home to advance in spiritual life. And I took shelter in a solitary, holy place in the forest. I became self-controlled and self-realizing. And I engaged constantly in devotional service, hearing, thinking, chanting, worshipping and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. I was successful in my attempt. So much so that my mind was always absorbed in devotional service. However, due to my personal foolishness, my mind again becomes attached, this time to a deer. Now I have attained the body of a deer and have fallen far from my devotional practice.
So that's how he lamented. Avyartha kalatvam. We should see that every moment of our lives is utilized for rendering devotional service and nothing else. This is the secure position for one wanting to return home back to Godhead. 30th verse describes Bharat Maharaj's detachment and he again goes to Palahashtam. Read the translation.
Although Bharat Maharaj received the body of a deer, by constant repentance he became completely detached from all material things. He did not disclose these things to anyone, but he left his mother deer in a place known as Kalanjar Mountain, where he was born. He again went to the forest of Kalagram and to the ashram of Tulasya and Kulaha.
So he again went there, leaving his mother dear. So Prabhupada writes in this purport that ISKCON members should always remember that the society is not like a free hotel. They should be very careful to execute their spiritual duties so that whoever comes will automatically become a devotee. So seeing one's own devotional service, a good example, other people will get inspired, whoever comes there. One should provide that kind of wonderful temple ambience to the guests. So no one should be captivated by his birthplace and family. One should take shelter of the association of devotees and cultivate Krishna consciousness. So even the dear Bharat also is not captivated by his birthplace or his family. Just left and went to Kulhashram again. So wherever there is an association of devotees, I will go there. That's the attitude. So Bharat now became very careful in the association of super soul. He gave up his dear body eventually, 31st verses. So holy places like Vrindavan, etc. were specially meant for execution of bhakti. Vrindavan specifically is most exalted and preferred holy place for Vaishnava devotees of Lord who are aspiring to return back to God. So, and that Bharat, dear Bharat becomes Jada Bharat. That we will see in the next chapter. Thank you all very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.